You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. It's Mark's Miserable Marvelous May. It's Mark's Miserable Marvelous May. M-A-R-C. Miserable Marvelous. M-A-R-C. Miserable Marvelous. M-A-R-C. Miserable Marvelous. M-A-Y May. M-A-Y May. M-A-Y, because he's a prisoner this month. Hey! Music.
I've seen it.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Hey, I'm dialing in from the Embassy Suites in New Orleans. Hi, everybody.
And Erica.
Hey, guys. Never forget, with great podcasting comes great responsibility. Right, Mark? Real twist on that famous...
You bet.
And that's right. We are in the midst of Mark's Miserable Marvelous May 3... Trey Miserab, where we are once again torturing Mark, who does not like superhero movies, with some of the Marvel content released by New World Pictures back when they owned Marvel in the late 80s and into the 90s, as we're going to see with this one. That's right, because we're going back to some Spider-Man that you may remember from your childhood. We're talking 1995 Spider-Man The Venom Saga.
In the future, all of us shall know, men once walked upon the earth below. Now we fly at mega height. Long live our land, is flight is might. Dragonflies maximize, fly forever through dragon's skies. Eyes maximize, watch the skies for dragonflies.
Oh, sorry, that was the trailer that was on the VHS of Dragonflies, the animated series. Don't worry, we will not be talking about Dragonflies, because that was not...
Damn it!
Yeah. Hold on, no, I thought we were going to talk about
no.
that.
Dragonflies maximize!
I have so many notes about Dragonflies.
I'm so sorry.
Now, granted, I didn't watch a single episode, no. But just that trailer alone...
Lots of thoughts.
It's like an early How to Train Your Dragon, but a cartoon version?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
It looked like Fantastic Planet, the series. If you're not familiar with it. that is a TriStar television series, and that is not New World at all. So unfortunately, we're not going to get to it. It only lasted for 26 episodes. But there is a trailer for Spider-Man The Venom Saga.
The world's greatest superhero is about to take a turn.
I don't know how I got here, and I'm in a costume I've never seen before.
To the dark side.
You're supposed to be the good guy. You can't do this! This Spider-Man plays for keeps.
Now, Spider-Man must fight to save his own life.
You've got to get that suit off! I need it!
And defeat Venom.
This time will be different! This time, Venom will win! You'll see us everywhere, even in your nightmares.
Spider-Man, The Venom Saga.
That's right, 1995's Spider-Man, The Venom Saga, brought to you by NASA's New York Space Shuttle Program. Some said launching and landing space shuttle aircraft in New York City could never be done. Sorry, they said it should never be done. But the innovators at NASA's New York Space Shuttle Program have found a way. Our scientists found that when cost-benefit analyses were eliminated and every practical safety measure was ignored, that launching a spacecraft in the urban New York sprawl was not only possible, it was also possible. NASA's New York Space Shuttle program, making no one's dream a reality. This movie, if you will, is directed by Bob Richardson, an animator who started out on projects like Disney's The Jungle Book and Heavy Traffic, then turned into an animation director and producer working mostly in TV on shows like Dungeons and Dragons and Muppet Babies, which he did at the time. He was doing Marvel Productions, which of course is bought by New World Pictures in 1986. Does Muppet Babies go beyond 1986, you might be asking? Yes. So would we talk eventually about Muppet Babies? The answer is yes.
See? Yes!
Fuck.
Muppet Babies, we make our dreams come true. Muppet Babies will do the same for you. I think that's how it goes. It was something like that. Oh my god, I loved that cartoon. Mark, yep. It's a cartoon!
Yep, somewhere around season 4, and I double checked to watch an episode and check the ending, and indeed it says Marvel Productions, a New World Company. Anyway.
Yes! Okay, guys. I'm locked in at least until we get through Muppet Babies, and then I don't know, but...
I've never wished for cries and whispers more.
How dare right you? Now. How dare you? How dare?
This show was made during his time at Marvel Productions, where he met Stan Lee and Avi Arad, who brought him in to produce and direct the Spider-Man animated series. He directed just about every single episode. There had already been 3 Spider-Man animated series before this. The original in 1967 was followed by a short-lived series in 1981 that sort of went right into Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which followed it. Richardson wanted this series to stand out, though, from the others, as he told The Commercial Appeal. In 1994, he said, "We built in some high-quality three-dimensional work to give an interesting feel to Spidey's movement in the city. Also, probably for the first time in the history of animation, we're trying to hold very closely to New York in terms of lots of key landmarks and buildings and like that. It looks like you're in New York, not some generic city."
So, question. In New York, are you able to open the windows on all the high-rise buildings?
Apparently so. Apparently so.
I mean, granted, my time in New York has been relatively limited. But at no point did I go to a high-rise and go, "Woof, it is balmy in here. Let's open up these windows." Mm-hmm. And actually had that as an option. But in this movie, animated movie, you can open a window no matter how high up you are, no matter what building you're in, new, old, modern, classic. Every window can be opened.
That's true. And also, as we'll get into in a little bit, they allow their police helicopters to fly very low through the city.
See, that I agree with. That I get. I mean,
not above the buildings, but low. This also has a great voice cast with Christopher Daniel Barnes as Peter Parker Spider-Man. Mostly, he's a voiceover actor. Barnes was the voice of Prince Eric in The Little Mermaid.
Oh, I know. Only because I recognize it because I watched that so many times.
Sure.
In case you were wondering if I was at risk of having sex in high school, the answer is no. A resounding no. There's no risk. My parents aren't even concerned. Does a guy want to stay the night? Sure, but he won't. There's no risk here. Where's Erica? Probably just watching Little Mermaid or listening to one of the soundtracks she has on tape, which is, guess what? Little Mermaid.
If you want to know what he looked like, he also played Greg Brady in the Brady Bunch movies that came out in the 90s as well.
Yeah.
So he also did a little live action as well.
Okay, Erica, I loved that musical montage.
Oh, thank you. It's also boy repellent when you're a teenager. Just, right. You know, when you can write your own songs about yourself. Go on.
I'm curious. That's the voice that you recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice that I couldn't get out of my head was John Beard, who plays the reporter, who was on, I believe, KTLA as well as Arrested Development.
Yeah. So yep, that's right. That's right.
I'm just want to quickly pause. What does that say about me?
Well, that was the voice I couldn't get out of my head. Let me also be very clear. That was the voice I couldn't get out of my head because I watched this back in the 90s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, the voice that stood out to me was, so I don't know what this says to me, was Linda Gary as Aunt May, because she did the English dub for Italian actress Rosalba Neri in New World's Lady Frankenstein. And was also the voice of Beatrice in Pinocchio and the Emperor of the Night.
It also says that Ryan was not at risk of having sex in high school. Leave the doors unlocked. No need to check his bed. We know he's sound asleep. And if he's awake, he's watching New World movies in the living room. Don't worry, there's no girls over. Not even boys. No one is home alone.
Don't forget, we also have Ed Asner. Ed Asner as J. Jonah Jameson. So we had a pretty great...
Oh, that was Ed Asner.
Yeah, stacked cast.
Oh.
Here's where you can watch Spider-Man, the Venom Saga. You can find the episodes are online. Specifically, this is a three-part episode arc of Season 1, which is called The Alien Costume, Part 1 through 3. Or... you can go on eBay and buy this clamshell VHS. Has it all, including the trailer for Dragonflies. So, Dragonflies!
Which, I mean, why that wasn't a surprise hit?
I don't know. I don't get it either. I
don't understand.
I did remember it. I remembered the song and the lyrics, so clearly I watched that too.
Oh, I want to be clear. I didn't. I never watched that, and I wouldn't have watched it. I would not have watched it. I'm saying when we measure that against movies that are coming out this year, it seems like it could have resonated then, like it should be resonating today.
Looks like somebody had a ton of sex when they were in high school. It's not Ryan, it's not Erica, it's Mark. It looks like it was Mark. He was out having sex while Ryan and Erica were home watching their respective movies alone. Mark was out on the town and now the song is getting weird, so I'm gonna wrap it up.
It's true. It's
I thought you were. Gonna, I thought you said you were going to ramp it up, so it's going to get weirder. Jeez.
Let's talk about what this movie is about. Here is what Spider-Man: The Venom Saga is about. Mark, let's start with you.
Fed up with his timid persona, Peter Parker decides to hit the gym, create a new look by buying all new clothes, and add a good old dash of confidence to his personality, only to discover that everyone thinks he's an asshole.
He was kind of jacked in this series, wasn't he? Like his shoulders.
Jacked. He wasn't even jacked. He was 10 feet tall.
Yeah, he was huge, and his shoulders were like so broad. It was like this guy, yes. I mean, if he walks around, you were like, damn, that guy plays football. You know, like he's huge.
In one day, he went from timid Peter Parker to just jacked, like WWE jacked. Mm-hmm. And everyone fucking hated him. And he had to be like, oh,
yeah.
I guess this isn't the personality for me.
Aww. People hate it when you're in good shape. All right, Erica. What is...
Dude, that's why I don't.
Yeah, that's why
gym.
I avoid it. I avoid it. No cost. I want to be liked. Erica, what is this movie about?
This movie is a lesson that when you look good, you feel good. And if looking good means that you wear a skin-tight rhino suit with the horn on the top of your head, or you wear a skin-tight all-black with a white spider on the chest onesie that covers your face with a mask, you look good, you feel good, you are unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dress to impress. Valid. Very true.
Unless, sorry, you're unstoppable unless there's a loud sound. And then all bets are off. Loud sounds.
But seriously, loud sounds are horrible. I mean, people, put on earplugs when you go to a concert. It's going to help your ears and you'll enjoy it more. Trust me.
For me, this movie was about the fact that we all have problems. And I think we can all agree that the best way to deal with those problems are to shoot them into space. That's how you deal with problems, guys.
Yeah. No, that's a good call, Ryan.
As for the Letterboxd synopsis, there's not much here. It was hard to find. This is what I could find for the Spider-Man animated series. It says, 1 minute he's Peter Parker, the college student, and the next he's Spider-Man.
Oh, okay. That's it?
That's it.
Is he a college student?
Yes. This series
Is it spring break? What's happening?
He does go to the school very briefly.
Very briefly.
Very briefly. To talk to Felicia Hardy, who he never knew during school years. She becomes the Black Cat, but that's fine. So this is a condensed version of the Black Spider-Man costume saga, essentially, which is the costume Spider-Man was wearing when I first started reading comics, Spider-Man comics, as a kid. This is the very first issue that I ever bought. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, number 107. Did you have that rated? No, but I did have it signed by the author.
Oh. Does that hurt or increase the value?
It increases it, but it's in such poor shape. It was really just for me.
Okay.
Know? Anyway, it debuted the black costume in Amazing Spider-Man number 252. It was actually an idea submitted by a reader, which Marvel purchased for the tidy sum of $220. And then they fleshed out for it to be an alien. And in Secret Wars number 8, it's revealed that Spider-Man found this suit while he was on another planet and he brings it back to Earth. Yes, Erica?
I was just going to put it out there, listeners. If you ever have an idea for us for an episode, just put it out there and maybe we'll buy it and use it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll pay you the low price of some money.
$2.20. It's a little bit. Not bad, though, for them. Eventually, this does become Venom. It becomes a huge property for them. So not bad for $220.
No, not at all. But question, Peter Parker is in college, right? Or he's a photographer, right? For the newspaper?
That seems to be Eddie Brock's job. But I do believe he works at the newspaper. Yes.
No, I'm saying the original story.
Sure.
How the fuck does he get to space?
He doesn't. Peter Parker?
You said he found the suit in space.
Yes. Well, that's in Secret Wars. Secret Wars, he is... That was like everybody was on another planet. There was the Beyonder. It was like a whole...
All right, you lost me. I regret asking the question.
There was a lot happening. Yes, there's a lot happening.
Listeners, I'm very sorry. I'm sorry.
It's too much to get into here. But
he's not sorry. Thought bubble coming out. He's not sorry.
But in this, it's discovered by John Jameson, the son of J. Jonah Jameson, who is an astronaut on a mission to an asteroid. And he's the one that discovers the symbiote when he takes a chunk out of a rock and goo starts oozing out of it.
This is a new one for the textbooks. Looks like obsidian, but it's almost like the rock's bleeding.
John, what is it? Did you say bleeding? John, what's going on down there? Do you copy?
Seismic disturbance.
Get back up here, now.
I copy that.
And it apparently already has a name, because before they even get the shuttle back to Earth, it's called Prometheum X. And I guess they did some preliminary studies of it in the ship, and then they already gave it a scientific name. Anyway, the point of this is that the pace of this is fast.
Yeah.
It has a lot of story to tell, and it wastes absolutely no time. Everyone's watching this space trip to an asteroid, including the entire staff of the Daily Bugle. That's Jameson Sr., Peter Parker, Robbie Robertson. But I had a question. Did they not think to send someone to the airport where the shuttle is landing?
Oh, is that where John Beard is?
Right.
Is that the airport?
But he is not somebody, I believe, that works for the Daily Bugle. He's out there scooping them. And they're back in the offices, like, just watching. Like, who is that guy? I don't know who he is.
How is John Beard and his news crew getting updates faster than anyone in the actual NASA office is getting updates?
Yeah. And when I'm asking, like, when I'm saying, like, who is he? He is only listed as newscaster. So he is not, he does not have a name.
Newscaster,
he is not a part. He's the only one doing anything. They got a whole staff on the Daily Bugle just sitting around an office doing nothing.
But that's newspaper, not newscaster.
That's right. That's right. They're on the print side.
Mm-hmm.
The Bugle staff aren't the only ones watching. So is Alistair Smythe. Mark, do you know who that is?
Fucking no idea. And what is that name? Who is that? Like,
yeah,
who
he's the named, Spider Slayer.
Who would fuck up their child by naming them that?
He's voiced by Maxwell Caulfield of New World's The Boys Next Door. And he's working alongside the Kingpin, who is voiced by Roscoe Lee Brown, who won a Daytime Emmy for his performance as the Kingpin in 1995.
I have a job for you. There's something aboard the shuttle I want you to get for me.
What shuttle?
The Kingpin sends the Rhino to intercept the shuttle once it crash lands on the George Washington Bridge and to get that tasty Prometheum X. Spider-Man tries to stop him, but the Rhino gets the drop on him and is about to murder him when he's called away because, you know, he's got to deliver that Prometheum X. I mean, come on, dude, that's the priority, okay? You can't just kill Spider-Man, you know, so... J. Jonah Jameson, though, he also flies in to rescue his son, literally flies in on his helicopter. They have a helicopter at the Daily Bugle, and he's holding onto the ladder, which is hanging underneath, which is highly dangerous, but whatever. They let him come in there and double check
his son. If Tom Cruise can do it, so can he.
That's right. That's
right. Come on now.
He did his own stunts.
Yeah.
J. Jonah Jameson did his own
and his hair there. Looked beautiful,
fantastic. Yeah, what a hold he has on that hair.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a hairspray or a mousse keeping that all together? Remember gels? Do they still sell gels?
I think it was a gel because it does not move.
Does not.
They have stiff. Made some they've made some advancements in hair technology since strides. The last time you had hair, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Back when you
oof.
Look, I used a lot of gel, which may have been the source and cause of the problem with my follicle issue. So if you're using, say, a super hold gel today, consider this a cautionary tale.
Jameson's son doesn't tell his father very much about the accident, but combined with some false information he gets from Bugle reporter, photographer, Eddie Brock, it's enough for the elder Jameson to be convinced that Spider-Man is somehow the culprit of whatever his son was doing in space. Like, I know J. Jonah Jameson has a reputation of always hanging things on Spider-Man, but your son was in space, sir. He was in space and he crash landed. How is this Spider-Man's fault? What did he do to make him crash land from space?
Yeah, my son was perfectly safe in space on his way back to New York till that damn Spider-Man got involved, messed everything up.
His logic is like, my son was in space, he had an emergency, and they had to crash land on a bridge, and then that Spider-Man is what messed everything up. I was like, what? And then he offers $1 million reward. I get it. That's the relationship that the elder Jameson has with Spider-Man, but that just seems a stretch.
On the side of my house right now, some woodpeckers have pecked a hole into the siding of my house. And in that hole is a family of birds who've decided to nest in the side of my house.
Oh.
And I'm just going to be open and honest with you, our listeners, as well as Ryan and Erica, I have been blaming Spider-Man for this entire fucking problem.
It is Spider-Man's fault that those birds took up residence in that woodpecker's hole.
My wife said, what happened with that hole? I said, fucking Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, radioactive Spider-Man. Fucking up my house and my siding. Spider-Man.
So he's convinced, and he goes in front of the reporters.
Mr. Jameson, anything more on your son and his co-pilot?
Are they still on the critical
list? What about Spider-Man? Are you sure?
Spider-Man did it. I'm sure of it. So sure that I'm offering $1 million to anyone who brings him in. $1 million.
I can't believe this. How could they get it so wrong? It's the Spider-Man justice system. Guilty until proven innocent.
Now there's nowhere Spider-Man can run. At last he'll get what he deserves.
Thanks, Aunt May. I needed that.
Okay, everyone who just listened to that, I want you to do this. If you loved the audio of all those voices, then when you get in your car tomorrow, I want you, before you play any music or a podcast, or our podcast, which I think you should listen to, turn down the bass and turn down the mid to zero. And then turn the treble up real high, and you can have that same kind of sound quality for the entire time that you listen to anything in your car.
Oh, I see. So that's what really drove you nuts about this. It was just the audio quality of the recording. A little
Ryan,
tinny.
That was
a little high.
Simply the tip of the iceberg with this one.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
The tip of the New York iceberg? I don't know. It's possible there, right?
Anything's possible in New York.
It's the city of brotherly love, right?
I think that's Philadelphia, but yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't remember it that way. Okay.
Distraught, Peter tosses his costume into the laundry, like out in the open in the laundry, just like, I mean, doesn't he live with Aunt May? Like, what is he doing?
I've never considered, how does he launder that outfit?
Yeah. Yeah.
And not get caught. And you got to think, it's got to be like your gym outfit that you left at school, like a couple weeks too many. Mm-hmm. And he's got to slide that thing on once in a while and be like, oof, oof, I should have laundered this one.
When you wash it, you got to hang dry it. Because if you dry it, you're locking in that stank. You know.
But like also, you don't want it to shrink.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you got to worry about that. You can't do the dryer too high, but also, you may have to do a couple washes, but he's leaving that thing on the top of the bin. Now, of course, that's reminiscent of a very famous cover where Spider-Man gave up and he throws the costume in the garbage. It was reused in one of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies, but he just leaves it on top of the laundry bin. I'm like, you live with Aunt May, dude. Like,
yeah.
How are you going to keep that a secret? Anyway, I guess he does.
Well, because he's always like, Aunt May, she's out of my fucking room. Gosh, she's my private space.
I know you're jerking off in there, Peter. I'm staying out.
I saw your Halloween costume with all that goo on it. Now that's going to be on you to rinse out, Peter. I've got some clothespins if you want to hang dry it, but...
I'll put it right next to your crusty undies.
You're a big boy now. You can wash out your own goo suit.
Your goo suit.
I made Uncle Ben wash his goo suit too when he was alive.
Your Uncle Ben had wet dreams for a long time. That didn't go away.
You know what those are, right, Peter? Do you need me to talk?
Do we
with
need
you
to have a
them?
Talk? Do we need to have a talk?
Gross.
Where's that part of this?
Speaking of the goo suit, he has pieces of that space slime from the shuttle. So the symbiote crawls off of Spider-Man's costume and bonds with Peter, and he ends up back in New York City and on the run from the cops, who are flying their helicopter, as I mentioned before, very low through the city in order to find Spider-Man and collect $1 million from a private citizen who they do not work for. And Spider-Man learns that this new suit helps him jump higher. It shoots his own webs. It helps him shapeshift. I don't remember that from the comics at all, but apparently he can shapeshift. Maybe I don't
also
remember.
Also makes him yoked.
And he's jacked. He's so jacked.
Yeah.
It's also making him very aggressive, or at least rude, in his interactions with Felicia Hardy at school or Aunt May. But he gets to use his newfound aggression when he intercepts the Rhino breaking into a government facility.
A little far from the zoo, aren't you?
Well, well.
Itch the itchy bitsy spider. All decked out, there's new threads. They ain't gonna look new for long. Let's get it over with. I gotta polish my horn.
La la. Somebody's got his own little gray goose suit.
Oh, wow. I mean, I'm actually a little bit concerned about him because what does he do for a living?
Who, the rhino?
Yeah.
He works for the Kingpin, apparently, and just runs at his beck and call to do whatever he has.
Look, he can't be getting paid a lot, and I hope he has good health insurance, because based upon this movie alone, he is maxing out his deductible, like, by March. Mm. Like, how are you going to afford that much hospital time?
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, maybe in New York it's different. You know, the city of angels.
Nope, that's Los Angeles. It's wrong. That's all right. The Rhino is voiced by Don Stark, who got his start in a Jack Hill film called Switchblade Sisters, but is likely more well-known for playing the next-door neighbor on That 70s Show.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a catch with the suit, and he finds it when a group of street vigilantes, though fortified with military-grade weapons, chase after him and use a sonic blaster on him. Which seems to slow the suit. Not enough attention was given to these guys that just are running around with some of the most high-grade weaponry that is happening today. And they're just no-name nobodies. Like, that was amazing to me.
Some would say they're just additional voices.
There it is. There it is.
But you're right, Ryan. Some sort of sound sonic thing that can project sound on people. Mm-hmm. It's 2025. I haven't seen that yet.
No, no.
And maybe that's what we should be focusing on. Maybe that's what we should be focusing
on.
You got to folk on to what we got.
Maybe that is what we should focus our attention towards, is that machine that just emits so much sound that it will take down any perpetrator.
I always love those, like, circles, like, as if sound comes out in this perfect circle as it comes towards you.
I love that.
I love that. Yeah.
That to me is science. That's, like, accepted little kid cartoon science where I'm like, yep, that sounds. That's what sounds look like.
Oh, sound.
Like
it comes.
Sound. Yeah. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. That's what sound looks like. If we were to look at it at sound, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get some answers, Spider-Man heads to Dr. Kurt Connors, who would become the Lizard, I suppose, in later episodes. But he examines a small piece of the suit, and he comes up with a miraculous diagnosis in almost no time.
It's a symbiote, an organism that thrives by bonding with another.
In this case, me.
But not only does the suit bond, in time it replaces. I'd almost be willing to say that this piece of material is a sentient creature.
You mean it thinks?
Where do you think you're going? You've got to get that suit off!
I can't. Not yet. There are some things I have to take care of first.
Get rid of it!
I need it!
When you look good, you feel good! I need it! I need that suit. What was it? Was it?
It gives me so much confidence.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it Men's Warehouse or something? What was there?
You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee it.
That's right. That's right.
But what's amazing is this doctor takes this piece of suit, puts it under a petri dish, identifies that it is living cells, combines that cells with other cells, shoots it on 16 millimeter, has the film developed, brings in an AV unit, runs the film all within minutes?
15 seconds maybe, say 25 seconds tops. Now, when we were kids, Mark, we had a microscope. I don't remember us making any sort of discovery anywhere near that just by looking at some shit on some slides. No.
Let alone shoot it on 16 millimeter and have our parents go, can you go develop this film? And can you have it back in about 12
like,
and a half seconds?
Okay, I'll head to Thrifty's on Thursday. That's when I'm going to go, but I'm not going today. No, you don't understand. I need this film developed and I need to project it in the next 30 seconds. I'm sorry, I'm not doing that right now.
Yeah. Maybe they have a different setup in New York. The Emerald City.
Nope. No, they didn't. It's not what it is.
New York, you'll like the way you look. I guarantee it.
Spider-Man ends up finding Smythe's lair and takes the Prometheum X, which he then has to immediately give back when Jameson Jr. is kidnapped. The drop-off point is a bell tower, which should come to no surprise to anyone that has read Web of Spider-Man number one, which I did, or has seen Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, because the ringing of the bells separates Spider-Man from the symbiote, but it instead bonds with Eddie Brock. Mark, wake up. We're still talking about the movie.
Yeah.
Mark, wake up. We're still talking. Eddie Brock followed Spider-Man to the bell tower. Why are they having this exchange at this bell tower? Where are they? I guess this is in New Jersey. Where are they?
It's that New York bell tower that everybody knows. It's super New York famous.
Yep, totally.
New Jersey, the Windy City.
No. Nope. And Venom has now entered the story at long last. And Spider-Man quickly finds out after Venom ends up taking down Rhino and the Shocker.
How did you get up here? Same way you did, Spider-Punk. Or... do you mind if we just call you Peter Parker?
What did you say?
Ooh, you're quite the bully one you want to be, aren't you, Parker? Problem is, Eddie Brock isn't the same guy he once was. Why don't we introduce you to our better half? We call ourselves Venom.
That's right. And that is the voice that Erica recognized. It is Hank Azaria, the guy who did the voice of The Simpsons. He's doing Eddie Brock and Venom. And of course, this means a final showdown between Venom and Spider-Man. And Spider-Man knows just how to kick off this battle royale. He clips out newspaper stories about Brock's firing from the newspaper and tapes them all over his apartment walls, which also means that Spider-Man has been breaking and entering into his apartment and then clipping all these newspapers. That's how he sets a trap for Venom. That's how he starts.
Ryan, you know this. That's how we had to do it back in the day. There was no social media. We had to go tactical.
That's right. That's
we had to go physical media.
You had to put that 25 cents into a newspaper stand and then take a bunch of copies out. Like, ooh, I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm gonna. That's how he starts it, and that's how he draws Venom out. Unbelievable strategy.
It worked, so you know,
it's true.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, he knew Eddie, okay. I guess, pretty well. Yeah. In fact, maybe if you kind of loved him while he also kind of hated him.
Now, Peter, it's time for things we loved.
Yes, Aunt May. We are going to introduce them things we hated.
I would like to just apologize for that Venom impersonation. It was very bad.
Aunt May, you just nailed. And the Venom, you were like, I don't know. You were very bad. Feeling it out. Yeah, we're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about Spider-Man, the Venom saga. Mark, what did you love?
Here's what I loved. J. Jonah Jameson loves his son. So much. This guy has been up to space. He's seen some shit. And his dad is proud. But his dad isn't going to let him just do one moonshot and call it a day. No. He's going to force him to do a job that his son really hates and is terrified of doing.
Yeah.
But that's not going to stop him. Son doesn't want to disappoint dad. And dad is going to force son to do what he thinks he can brag to his friends about at the golf club. So I loved the familial bond between son and father in this movie.
Yep. Yeah, it's true, Mark. In the comic books, John Jameson goes to space and he ends up finding this necklace that turns him into the man wolf. And he's a werewolf. True.
That's like a parody of a comic book.
No, it's true.
The man wolf.
Man wolf.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Fair. Well, that's what I loved. I loved watching the dad say he's going back up to his space, up to space, and the son being like, yeah, dad, I can't wait.
Can't wait to get back up into space.
Yeah, I'm going to make you proud.
Yes, while he was on the moon, Jameson found the mystical Godstone, an other dimensional ruby. The jewel grafted itself to his throat after he made it into a pendant and started wearing it around his neck and extended tendrils through his body. Moonlight activated the gem, which transformed him into a lycanthropic man-wolf.
I appreciate that you did the real-time research on that, but I didn't need to know that.
Oh, but let's just make sure that listeners understand that before he did the real-time research, he off the dome remembered man-wolf.
Yes, I mean, yeah. I just wanted to make sure I had it absolutely correct about the necklace. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't off on that
and
one.
And that is why Ryan Dome was home alone. No girls around, just on his own. On the dome. No girls around, no telephone calls from girls because he's just at home reading his comics. And Erica's also at home singing to herself, making up some
watching
songs.
Watching this show.
Watching Little Mermaid.
Watching this show.
Watching this. Yeah, hell yeah, I was.
Yeah, speaking of love, Erica, can you summon into one thing? What did you love?
I cannot summon into one thing, but I can summon into two things. The first thing that I loved was hearing that the opening song. Not to love about that song. The lyrics are literally just Spider-Man, Spider-Man, radioactive Spider-Man, then a badass guitar solo with sounds and explosions, and then Spider-Blood, Spider-Blood, radioactive Spider-Blood. It's perfect. It's perfect. It's beautiful.
Just done through that, like, what's that thing done in...
like the Daft Punk like filter, the... like...
Peter Frampton.
yeah,
the vocoder. Vocoder. Peter Frampton.
Where he just, do you feel like I do? Just radioactive spider blood. Amazing. Amazing.
That's so amazing. Amazing. Love that. And it, as soon as I heard that, I'd already thought, God, I've seen this. I think I've seen this during the Dragonflyers commercial. And then hearing the opening song, I was like, I've seen this. I've seen it. And I was so excited to rewatch it because it's been many years since I've seen it. So that was the first.
I've seen it.
That's right. That's right. I've seen it. I've seen it. The second thing that I loved was Rhino. He looks ridiculous. He's in his all gray. He's super. You think Peter's jacked in this? Rhino is way more jacked than Peter and is wearing this skin tight gray suit that even covers the hands, the toesies, and it goes around everything except like a circle around his face so that his face just peeks out, I guess. But is it a suit? Does he have rhinoceros skin? Does he look like that all the time? Did he put that on? We may never know, but I loved it because it's
he apparently
just...
has to polish at least the horn.
Ooh, he's got to polish that horn, guys.
But let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what's something you hated?
I hated the fact that...
You had to watch it?
With all... What?
That you had to watch it?
Look, that's easy. Look, what I hated was, with all these battles, there is an epic amount of destruction happening to buildings throughout this city, you know, New York City, the Music City. And
I just feel terrible
about these people, these construction people who are constantly driving around the city and going like, fuck, another building got destroyed over on a Tuesday night. And now we have to figure out how to fix this thing. But not only that, like sides of buildings are destroyed. Bell towers are destroyed. Entire buildings collapse. But what really got me is at one point they're fighting on the roof and Venom like pulls apart an air conditioning unit to use a bar to beat up Spider-Man. And I'm thinking of these poor people coming back. It's yep. August. They're coming into their day job. And they're like, what? Is the air conditioning not on? Yeah. Yeah, there was another Spider-Man fight on the roof. And I called the guy, but they're not going to be here for a while. So we're just going to have to work it out, folks. I mean, I guess it's good because they can open up the windows. But in the middle of summer, that's not going to help you much. It's just going to be a steamy office. And I hated that those poor people are going to have to work in a steamy office for who knows how many days because these two motherfuckers couldn't work it out in a civilized way.
Well, it looks like, you know, with all that damage, they're going to have to bring in damage control. Because that's the group in Marvel Comics that cleans up after all the superhero battles.
Ryan. Ryan.
Yes, Mark?
I feel like I failed you as a brother.
Damage control, Mark. Yeah, you didn't get that miniseries? I did. I don't quite like hearing about the tales of the people that cleaned up after the superheroes. It's a good time.
There's many things I could have shown you. And I didn't.
You didn't. You ignored me. You just let me get into those comics. Erica, what did you hate? Did you hate anything?
I hated that it was only an hour. I could have gone on, you know? The fact that I had to watch Tin Drum for 2+ hours and I only got to watch Spider-Man for one.
I'll give you that.
Feels unfair. Feels unfair. So,
well, there
that's
is
all that I hated.
There is a longer version because, of course, I think 96 is when this VHS comes out. But in the 2000s, they release, and that's on Buena Vista Home Entertainment. It comes out on DVD, and that has a couple more episodes of the show that has other Venom episodes. But because this is the New World version, I didn't have us watch that. I only had us watch the hour-long one because that's the one that would have been New World. Speaking of something I hated the weird Spider-Sense thing that they do in this series, where it's like a couple flashes of these weird, like, they look like Jackson Pollock paintings or whatever, and but they're shown sort of quickly, so they're almost like subliminal messaging. It's very weird, and that's where we talked about the circles coming off of the sonic blaster being like, that makes scientific sense to me as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I also think the three squiggly lines that come off of Spider-Man's head that's like, I'm in danger, that's pretty universal to me. I don't understand why we ignored that and tried to throw these weird impressionistic paintings that we just... were these backdrops that it just felt like, wait, what was that? What just happened? And then it's like Spider-Man senses he's in danger, but I was just confused every time they showed that. I was like, what the hell is that? Hated that. Let's go to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene, it's really favorite scenes, which is also a thing I hated, but it's also my favorite scenes. And that is the incessant, never-ending interior dialogue of Peter Parker. And because it's absolutely wild, but yet I was so entertained by it, he is talking to himself about every little thing that's happening all around him. I just thought, if I would drive myself crazy if in the morning I'm walking to my car, do I have my car keys? Oh, I think I left my car keys over here. I have my car keys. Get in the car and, oop, I have to take a shit. Can I make it to work in time? Like, the amount that he is just talking to himself is never ending in this entire movie, question mark. And while it annoyed me to no end, I kept laughing because it's not the normal kind of dialogue of like, thinking, boy, I wonder what that person meant when they said this, and this. It's things like, I should put that suit away. I will do that tomorrow. I will go to sleep now. Like, that's not dialogue people have in their head. That's not how that works.
But he's always doing like little quippy, like, I'll put that suit away when it suits me.
It's funny you say that though, Mark, because like early comics, like if you read like early, even the Stan Lee ones, like the early Spider-Man or the early like X-Men or Fantastic Four, there's art and then there is just bubbles galore, like talking and then going, God, should I have said that? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe he won't like me now. Like, it's crazy how much they used to.
No, I totally get that. And I did read comic books. And I get that. That's a comic book.
Right, right.
That you read.
Yeah.
A movie, even a cartoon, doesn't need that just
constant narration,
exposition, constantly like explaining every little thing that a person is supposedly thinking in their head. And yeah. I also started to think maybe he's crazy.
He may be, but Spider-Man is a character that even outside of the 60s and stuff, he has always kind of maintained a certain constant dialogue with himself. Because he should be
concerned about that. He should be worried.
There's a lot going on with him that he should be concerned about. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene, and we already heard the amazing clip from it, is the fight scene between Spider-Man and Rhino. Because one of the moves that Spider-Man does is to place Rhino on his horn, which is on the top of his head, to place the horn into the ground and then to spin him like a top while he's balanced on the horn. Amazing. I didn't know that was a move. Why didn't he tip over? Why didn't he fall down? Why didn't he just put one of his legs down and stop it? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. It's wonderful about it. But that move in particular just cracks me up. So easily my favorite scene.
My favorite scene is also a fight scene. It's a fight scene with Shocker. And Shocker just starts doing all these like, no, Mark, not like a sexual Shocker, just Shocker the villain.
Okay.
Oh my God. Mark, it's the scene where he's fighting him and Shocker just keeps bringing up these puns about his powers.
A double cross? Big surprise.
If you think that's a surprise, then you're in for a real shock.
And I'm gonna tear you limb from limb.
Oh, I'm all shook up.
It's like, dude, we get it. We get what your powers are. Stop talking right. about it.
It's in the name, bro. We got it.
We get it. Your name is Shocker. We understand what you do. But he like won't let it go. I just laughed a lot at that scene because that made me laugh. But let's get into our final questions. Here are our final questions for Spider-Man the Venom Saga. If Eddie is trying to sell photos to Jameson, why lie about their content only to end up hiding the content in your shower head? Isn't that the reason why you actually got thrown out of your apartment? Because you're not actually getting any money for any of those pictures?
Yeah. Wouldn't it get ruined being in the shower head though? It's gonna get wet.
They're gonna get destroyed. That's a terror. But oh, what you're saying is he's a bath kind of guy. That explains a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's really probably the reason why he's getting kicked out of his apartment, because he took all those pictures and James is like, oh yeah, you got all those pictures. Cool. Can I get them? He's like, no, I'm going to hide them. I can't hand these to you because I actually lied about them. So I'm actually going to hide them in my shower head so you never get them. Like, what is your game plan here, Brock? How are you going to make a living, bro?
Let's be honest. I don't think I would ever think to look in a shower head for a roll of film.
Great hiding space. I mean
it is a genius hiding place.
Yeah. I think we kind of mentioned this kind of a little bit before, but how do you think Peter is doing in his classes right now?
C's get degrees.
Fair. Yep. Yep. That's it. I agree with Erica.
It isn't about though being smart. It's just about like maybe show up. I don't know. Spend some time there. I don't know. More than just dropping in and being like, look at my cool new suit.
Oh my gosh. That's another favorite scene when he's like changing how he looks. He's changing his appearance with the power of Venom. Wonderful.
Speaking of, with the power of Venom, which member of Aerosmith did Peter change into?
That's hard to say. I don't know.
I don't really.
I guess the hunky guitar player. What's his name?
I was hoping it was going to be Tom Hamilton, the bass player, but it is, in fact, trying to be Joe Perry.
Yeah, Joe Perry.
Joe Perry wrote the theme song. He's the one playing the guitar solo from Aerosmith.
What?
That's Joe Perry.
Yes. Wow. I did not know that. Wow. That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yep. The 3D sequences we talked about earlier, there's some 3D sequences in there. It isn't just about going through the city of New York. There's some other weird 3D sequences, which I thought, did they come from the Lawnmower Man?
Or did the Lawnmower Man use them?
Hard to tell. Question. Yeah.
Lawnmower Men.
Alistair Smythe and Kingpin want to sell the Prometheum X, but is the real money actually in developing that hover chair that he uses?
Seriously, that chair is awesome.
Yeah, but it's not going to get you onto a standard elevator. So I feel like he's trapped on the floor.
It's a little long.
Yeah, he hasn't left that floor of that building ever since he's been in it.
So yeah, true.
I think there are some flaws in the design.
Hmm.
You guys need to come up with some more. I need to see some more blueprints, guys, before I invest.
Right, exactly. This is a prototype. It's just a proof of concept, people. Come on.
Right. We're going to work on this. I can use this very easily in my very huge lair inside New York City.
But it's not going to allow you to go grocery shopping at Gelson's. I'm sorry.
Are there Gelson's in New York? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, of course there are. New York, the Sunshine State.
Let's go to some research. Of course, by the time we're in the 90s, we're on to the third ownership group. That is Ron Perelman, who bought not only New World, but before he buys New World, he actually buys Marvel from New World. And in May 1994, the said Perelman agreed to switch. He had a lot of TV stations. That was kind of his big deal as well with New World, is that he had a bunch of different TV stations. They were actually originally were CBS, and he switches them to Fox Broadcasting. And in doing so and taking all these stations and turning them into Fox, which at that point in time, Fox was becoming another network. And in doing so, he gets $500 million to switch all of those networks to Fox. Wow. And the agreement gave Marvel characters access to a broadcast network. So they were already doing the X-Men series, which was on Fox. And they started to try to develop more of the Marvel properties. Jill Cuttrick, an analyst at Smith Barney Inc., told Bloomberg Business News in 1984, said, "Marvel is a Walt Disney wannabe." Speaking of irony. Mm. Their big assumption is that Spider-Man and prognostication. Their big assumption is that Spider-Man and X-Men will have the same universal appeal as Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. And so to prove that theory, Perelman was licensing Marvel out all over the place. As a matter of fact, at the time that the Spider-Man animated series comes out, there was also a $100 million movie set up at Carolco Pictures, which was going to be directed by James Cameron, which didn't come to fruition. But he also, that's when they do the $100 million theme park attraction at Universal Studios in Florida. Acclaim Entertainment does video games. And then there's the Spider-Man. There's a couple of TV shows. Spider-Man comes out as well. Spider-Man coming out with Stan Lee involved. Yes, he was. Because as I mentioned, he was working with Bob Richardson and he was working along. In fact, Bob Richardson told the commercial appeal, he said, "We meet with Stan on an almost daily basis. He's very much on site helping us keep Spider-Man, Spider-Man, and rewriting dialogue." Stan, as I had said, got together with Avi Arad and they started Marvel Films, which was actually separate from New World Animation, according to Richardson. Richardson said that He was tasked with doing the running the day to day of the show and directing and delivering the show so the Fox network would be happy with it. But he had to do it all under the New World umbrella. In fact, he told the World's Finest that, quote, "I wanted to build a studio in the San Fernando Valley that would be more centrally located to most people, but we were forced to use space in the New World building, which was on the west side in LA." So they had no studio, and he had to build a whole new studio in order to run the whole operation of the Spider-Man animated series in the New World building. Though he says, quote, "Later on, right in the middle of production, we were forced to move out of the New World building. And even though we had to rebuild the whole studio once again, at least it was in the valley where it would be more centrally located for most of the staff to travel to." He also says that they did not have to contend much with James Cameron's Spider-Man. The only thing he said that they couldn't do was that they weren't allowed to use the character of Sandman. That's why that character doesn't show up. That was the one stipulation from the James Cameron movie, which, of course, never comes about. They also ran afoul of some issues with the broadcast standard and practices, which was interesting because there was also a Batman TV show or cartoon animated series, a Batman animated series at the same time. And so this is what Richardson says about it. He says, quote, "I think we had a tougher time with BS&P, broadcast standards and practices, because of the realistic design style that we decided to use for Spider-Man, as opposed to the more stylized Batman series. I was told by BS&P that Batman was a cartoonier show. Therefore, the restrictions were a little bit more liberal. Batman was also considered a period piece because of the style. So they got away with fewer restrictions because it was felt that you were watching something from another era."
Wow.
Released on video on VHS in 1996. They were released a whole bunch of them. So there's also some releases of Iron Man, Origin of Iron Man, Fantastic Four, The Origin, and Gargoyles, the Movie. That's what comes out, as according to the Daily Mirror, in 1996. And that's it. That is it for Spider-Man, The Venom Saga. What a movie. What a movie. Mm. I had a lot of fun watching this. I know Mark hated it, but I enjoyed the heck out of it.
I'm so happy for you guys.
Thank you.
And that is it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you're going to enjoy the rest of Mark's Miserable Marvelous May 3, Tres Miserables, as we explore more of the Marvel content released by New World Pictures. I know Mark's going to enjoy it. We hope you will too. And if you want to enjoy all of our episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com, and you can get all of our episodes, articles, t-shirt. Buy us a t-shirt to help support the show. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.